Hello, I'm Montse Alvarado. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
FDA approved abortion by mail based on data it admitted was, quote, not adequate.
U.S. Supreme Court justices hear oral argument in the Mifepristone case. Analysis on the arguments presented and what this case could mean for the future of the pro-life movement.
You wouldn't believe how much people donate things and knit blankets and everything for the babies, little hats and whatnot.
Prenatal care, support, and supplies for pregnant mothers on the brink of ending the life growing inside them. The clinic helping to save lives. And while the Florida Supreme Court protects life at 6 weeks, voters could still add protections for abortion into their state constitution.
This amendment goes far, far beyond where most Floridians would land on the issue and is extreme in its scope.
Two major decisions by the Florida State Supreme Court lay out diverging paths on the future of abortion in the state. The Florida Supreme Court upheld the state's existing 15-week ban on abortion. However, the court also approved the wording of a proposed state constitutional amendment protecting the so-called right to an abortion. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed the 15-week ban into law in 2022, but it was challenged in court. In 2023, he signed a 6-week ban, which was also challenged. The state Supreme Court allowed the 6-week ban to remain blocked until they ruled on the 15-week statute. This week, in upholding a 15-week ban, it now allows for the 6-week ban to take effect in 30 days. But with a proposed constitutional amendment on the ballot, Florida voters could change all of that this November. A lot at stake in Florida. Angela Curtalo, director of the Respect for Life Ministry for the Archdiocese of Miami, joins us to share the diocesan perspective on these rulings. Welcome to Pro-Life Weekly, and thank you for joining us. A victory now with the 6-week ban taking effect in less than 30 days. But it might be short-lived with this ballot initiative to create this constitutional right to abortion in the state in November. What do voters need to know about this amendment, Angela?
Well, this amendment is very deceiving. Simply in its title, it's called the Amendment to Limit Government Interference with Abortion. But what it actually does is it removes all regulation on abortion, which is very dangerous. It removes all protections for the unborn and protections even for the mothers as well with its misleading language.
And how can you then educate as church on what a state constitutional amendment could mean? Are there different town halls that you're holding, or how is it that you're getting out the door?
So we're in the process of putting together our plan, but we've started by contacting all the parishes with some announcements to put out in our parishes. But what we want to do, as you're mentioning, is educate people, because a lot of times people go to the ballot, see an amendment, read the title, vote on it. And I think that even people who are pro-choice would agree that this is a very extreme amendment, but they have to understand what's in the body of it, the language, and how misleading it is. For example, it does not clearly define viability, and therefore we're talking about abortions through every trimester of pregnancy up until birth. We're talking second and third trimester abortions, which even pro-choice people will tell you, oh, well, I wouldn't want to see that happen. It does not clearly define healthcare provider, the term healthcare provider. It doesn't say doctor. It just says as medically necessary, as stated by a healthcare provider. That could be just someone, you know, behind a desk in an abortion clinic. It could be anyone. So it's very, the terms are very broad. It also removes regulations and protections. Obviously, it removes all protections for the unborn, but things such as safe and sanitary conditions for the mother, informed consent. And one of the big ones is it would remove our current law in Florida in which a minor has to have parental consent prior to having an abortion, and replace it with a parental notification law, which is kind of deceiving. It looks like it's a, you know, like a protection put in there, but it really reverses our our law that means that they have to have consent of the parent. So it's really taking away the responsibility and the right of parents to parent their children and help them make important decisions when it comes to their health and well-being.
Now, that sounds, all of that litany that you just listed off of all of these, of the meat of the amendment and how difficult it will be to actually get that out for people to understand what is going on here. What pro-life resources, then, are there for mothers in Florida? Is there a happy story that you can tell as well associated with this amendment?
Well, absolutely. On the same day that this amendment was, the decision was made to have it on the ballot, the decision was made to uphold the 15-week ban, which means that our six-week heartbeat law will go into effect on May 1st. And what resources do we have? Archdiocese of Miami is very unique in that we own and operate our own pregnancy help centers. And we have three of them, two in Broward County and one in Miami-Dade County. And we offer free and confidential services to help mother make choices. And we give them all of their options. And we explain, you know, to them what happens during an abortion procedure, because many of them simply don't know. But we put all the options out there and support them with free ultrasounds, free pregnancy testing, the free and confidential options counseling, Earn While You Learn classes, educational classes, Project Joseph classes for the men, where they're educated on being good fathers and supporters of the mothers of their children. The Earn While You Learn principle allows them to use points to purchase brand new items that are in our boutiques that we have. And of course, not everyone is available to take a class. So we have also an emergency material assistance program as well. We have adoption planning referrals. And we also offer a beautiful post-abortion healing program, Project Rachel. We use a model called Entering Canaan for both men and women to show them that there is hope and healing after having made an abortion decision, and having an abortion experience.
Now, Angela, very quickly, this is not new for you. You've seen amendments like this in the past. You've seen the abortion debate in Florida in the past. Are you optimistic that you'll actually be able to prevail in protecting women and children in November?
We have God on our side, you know, and nothing is too big for him. And we have the seven dioceses of the Archdiocese of Miami coming together to educate people on what this amendment says. And I'm confident that we can defeat this.
Well, we'll be praying for you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. God bless.
The state of Arizona may also see abortion on the ballot. An organization called Arizona for Abortion Access has surpassed the number of signatures they need to get a proposal on the ballot. Arizona Right to Life, which opposes the proposed amendment, warns that it has no restrictions on partial birth abortions and eliminates parental consent. The Secretary of State's office will still need to verify the signatures before the initiative will officially be on the ballot.
The FDA concedes that between 2.9 and 4.6% of women will end up in the emergency room.
Oral argument at the Supreme Court on the abortion pill, mifepristone. Lawyers for the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs, or APLOG, say the Food and Drug Administration's own data reflects safety concerns for the drug. The data shows up to 4.6% of women are forced to go to a hospital emergency room after taking mifepristone. 7.9% of women required surgical intervention to complete an abortion. APLOG argues that the FDA relaxed too many guidelines for the drug, putting women's lives at risk. More than half of all abortions in the United States are carried out using the abortion pill regimen. And the latest guidelines allow this drug to be distributed by mail up to 10 weeks of pregnancy. But lawyers defending the FDA say the drug is safe and effective. The outcome of this case could impact access to this deadly drug nationwide. Here's a closer look at oral argument.
Calling on a new type of pro-life movement to protect the safety of women and babies, Melanie Salazar was outside the court protesting for two.
To our knowledge, there have been 28 confirmed women who have been killed from the abortion pill. So I want to see no more women be killed, and I want, ideally, preborn children's lives to be protected from fertilization.
The Supreme Court heard two consolidated cases, both centered around the FDA's approval of mifepristone, the first of two drugs used in a chemical abortion. Elizabeth Prelogar, Solicitor General for the Department of Justice, argued on behalf of the Biden administration. She told the justices that the plaintiffs had no right to seek such far-reaching relief, arguing the doctors and associations are already protected by federal religious freedom laws.
If the doctors have a conscience injury, there's a specific statute designed to deal with it, to specifically tailor-made guard against the risk of that injury occurring. And instead, they're reaching out and seeking to invoke rights under a different statute. And the relief that they're seeking would dramatically alter the approved conditions of use for mifepristone and affect women all around the nation.
The justices seemed unconvinced that the doctors had any right to sue in this case, meaning that access to mifepristone could remain the same.
And this case seems like a prime example of turning what could be a small lawsuit into a nationwide legislative assembly on an FDA rule or any other federal government action.
They're saying because we object to having to be forced to participate in this procedure, we're seeking an order preventing anyone from having access to these drugs at all. And I guess I'm just trying to understand how they could possibly be entitled to that given the injury that they have alleged.
Questioning the drug maker Danko Labs, Justice Alito attributed financial gain to their defense motives.
I gather your injury is that you think you're going to sell more if the restrictions that previously were in place were lifted.
Yes.
So you're going to make more money.
I think that certainly a company's ability to market its product is a part of how it considers the regulatory scheme that governs its conduct.
Aaron Hawley, senior counsel at Alliance Defending Freedom, represented the pro-life doctors at the high court.
So to speak to Dr. Francis at the beginning, there's been some confusion, I think, about the precise nature of the conscience harm. But if you look at JA 155, paragraph 15, she talks about her and other APLOG members who object not only to taking the life of an unborn child during an elective abortion, but also to, quote, completing that process.
Vastly outnumbering pro-life advocates, pro-abortion groups led arguments of a different nature outside the court.
We're here to support reproductive rights and stand for abortion. If the medicine has been proven to be safe on multiple occasions, why would we not continue to use it?
Dozens of white lab coats could be seen on the pro-life side. Doctors who have helped women who face deadly complications from taking mifepristone. Dr. Susan Bain, a board-certified OBGYN, says she and her medical colleagues are the last line of defense for women who take the abortion pill without medical supervision.
The FDA's label is 1 in 25 women will end up in the emergency department with potentially life-threatening complications. And because of that, we are put in a position to help them. The reality is that what's happening right now with abortion drugs is not standard of care. Women need ongoing care. They need the same medical histories, physical exams, labs, and diagnostic testing. They need follow-up, and they're getting none of that with this.
We know oral argument is mostly theater. Justices leveraging the arguing attorneys to make points they want their fellow justices to hear from someone else. Let's break down what happened with Adam White, senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Adam, you are a regular now on EWTN. Thank you for coming back. Justices Thomas and Justice Gorsuch joined other justices who thought the doctors might not even have standing or the right to sue in this case. What does that tell us about the potential outcome right from the start?
Well, I think oral argument sent a pretty clear sign that there is a high likelihood the court will not actually decide the substantive issue at hand, namely, was the FDA's changes to its authorization of the abortion pill lawful or not. The court, the Supreme Court and all other federal courts, they are constitutionally empowered to hear what's called cases and controversies, which means that the plaintiffs bringing cases have to have standing. They have to show to the judge's satisfaction that the plaintiffs and their organization suffer an actual injury caused by the defendant, which can be remedied by the court. And throughout oral argument in this case, the justices, almost across the board, had real questions about whether the doctors in this case could sufficiently prove that they would actually be affected by this FDA policy. The court did delve a little bit into the FDA's analysis, but by and large, this case has become a broader case about how and when people can challenge decisions of administrative agencies.
That's right. And so this role that the doctor plays in abortion complications, it did come up many times. It was one of the main arguments and explanations that attorney Aaron Hawley had. Do those arguments make any difference at all?
Well, the arguments certainly make logical sense. The two doctors in particular who filed affidavits in support of their standing told the courts that they are at a significant risk to be summoned into an emergency situation, say an emergency room, where they would have to complete a process of a medical abortion right there in the emergency room without real time to express their own religious-based objections to participating in this. And of course, in theory, that makes sense. And I don't think any of the justices really disputed that that's possible in theory. But to prove standing, plaintiffs normally have to show that their possible injuries are not just theoretical, but there is a real concrete probability that they could actually be affected by these policies. And even a number of the conservative justices, including Justice Amy Coney Barrett, seemed very hesitant to conclude that the declarations, the affidavits filed in this case, were sufficient to really convince the judges that these doctors are at a substantial risk of having to assist in medical abortions.
Now, what kind of remedy would those doctors then have? If they don't have some kind of a conscientious objection, a federal claim, do they have some kind of a tort, some kind of a criminal, or any other kind of remedy that they could bring to the courts?
Well, you know, as I listened to oral argument and I listened to it again, really to think through this exact question, it seems to me that the upshot of this case, if the court holds that these doctors do not have standing to challenge this FDA policy, it could have ripple effects through the medical profession more generally. Because if the justices, in effect, punt these questions to the emergency context, where there is very little time for doctors make their objections, and in a context where it might be very hard for a doctor to make objections, I think there will be a push by doctors and by those who support them for hospitals and emergency rooms to create an infrastructure ahead of time so that doctors' religious objections can be known, that emergency rooms and others can plan in advance for this, so that in the end, the doctors are not required to make or withhold their objections in the most horrible emergency circumstances. And so if the court does not decide this case, I think there'll be a real push for hospitals and doctors to start planning in advance for this.
Right. Well, let's go back to the FDA then. FDA surveillance of adverse effects did come up, and with Danko Labs as well. Is there any way that this case could affect how the FDA looks at drug approvals and reporting more specifically?
Well, that's a great question. And you're right that this did come up a little bit during oral argument, but it wasn't fully aired. None of the substantive issues were fully aired. But just as this case has come to stand for something more on questions of who can sue, who has standing to sue, even if the court doesn't reach the merits, I do think that the FDA's actions in 2016 and especially in 2020, and including the 2016 decision to roll back reporting requirements in 2016 to roll back reporting requirements mm-hmm. for non-fatal complications, it does call into question the rigor of the FDA's analysis in this. And while judges, including the justices here, are always reluctant to micromanage policy judgments, especially where agencies might claim some kind of expertise, cases like this are a stark reminder that oftentimes agencies do begin with a policy objective in mind and reframe their analysis accordingly. And that's a much broader question and problem in modern administration.
Now, nationwide or universal injunctions also came up. What was Justice Gorsuch's objection to this? Might others try to convince him otherwise?
Justice Gorsuch pushed back slightly at the plaintiffs here, asking why, even if these doctors have the right to sue here, why the remedy has to go beyond these doctors in particular, say, giving them some kind of exemption personally, and going so far as to rescind the FDA decisions altogether. And that's an issue that goes well beyond this case. Questions of district court judges from one administration to the next issuing decisions that purport to shut down a federal policy nationwide just from one federal district courthouse. And many justices, including Justice Thomas, have raised concerns about this over the years. Justice Gorsuch might see this case as an opportunity, maybe in a concurring opinion, to reiterate concerns about these nationwide or universal injunctions. Justice Gorsuch did something very similar, by the way, on the standing question. Even while acknowledging that it's unclear and maybe doubtful that these plaintiffs do have standing in this case, Justice Gorsuch pointed out that in other areas of law, including when individuals want to raise Establishment Clause challenges to policies they don't like, the Supreme Court in decades past was more lenient to those plaintiffs. That might not cut in favor of the plaintiffs in this case, but Justice Gorsuch and others might use this case to point out that maybe standing needs to be made more uniform across all areas of constitutional law.
Well, it sure sounds like there are a lot of tricky issues that didn't really get to the pro-life issues at hand, but that there are other ways that these doctors and mothers and children might be protected in the future. Thank you so much, Adam.
Thank you.
The governor of South Dakota, Kristi Noem, has signed the nation's first medical education bill that aims to clarify the state's life at conception law and counter abortion misinformation. The MedEd bill requires South Dakota's Department of Health to make a video explaining state's abortion bans and clarifies exemptions to the law as to when doctors are permitted to intervene. The bill passed overwhelmingly on the floors of both state chambers. The Department of Health has until September 1st. To create the video. Up next, combating a pro-death culture with love, compassion, and support. We tour a pregnancy clinic on wheels that provides prenatal and postnatal care for mothers contemplating abortion. We'll be right back. On the front lines of the pro-life movement are doctors, nurses, and volunteers going out in their neighborhoods to share that there are options to choose life. We bring you aboard a mobile pregnancy clinic to get an inside look at how they care for new mothers and their babies.
We are here. We're open for walk-ins. We just had a walk-in this morning.
Ready to help at a moment's notice. Nurse Chris welcomes pregnant mothers into the Holy City Mobile Pregnancy Clinic regularly. The clinic, operated by Holy City Pregnancy Center, brings free services to multiple neighborhoods for women who may not have other options nearby.
We're in three locations, three times a week, every week, 52 weeks a year. Remount Road, Folly Road, and Ashley River Road down the street from here.
Holy City has been a place where pregnant mothers go to seek help since 2004, and it's just one part of the trove of pro-life resources here.
All the resources available that is not the secular media doesn't let everybody know about.
Sure.
And it's so much. It's ridiculous how much.
We have a lady that's expecting twins. We got brand new car seats for her. We got an extra pack and play for her.
Between their standing facility and their state-of-the-art mobile clinic, Holy City helps thousands of mothers not only to choose life for their babies, but also offer support for these new moms after they've given birth.
That we have pregnancy care teams that follow the women all the way up to even 2 years of age of the baby. So it's not just, oh, save the baby and then let mom flounder. No, we're here to help them along the way.
The clinic may seem small, but it's very efficient.
There's a little tiny RV bathroom. I don't know if you ever see the tiniest things, but that's where the ladies will give us their urine sample to test for the pregnancy. And then once that's determined as positive, we will do an ultrasound here.
It's equipped with a restroom where a pregnancy test can be taken, an exam room, and even a brand new ultrasound machine to identify the baby in the womb.
Usually you can find them as little as 5-6 weeks.
On February 9th, they parked right across the street from the Charleston Planned Parenthood, a perfect spot to potentially save lives.
She was Spanish-speaking. I've fumbled with my Spanish, but I could speak some Spanish.
A young girl who had an appointment scheduled at Planned Parenthood first stopped by the mobile pregnancy clinic just a few steps away. Normally, they park a ways down the road to minister to new mothers at this location. But this first attempt to park as close to the Planned Parenthood as possible had an immediate effect.
Usually we do an interview in this area. It kind of looks like a living room type of area. Just talk about their history of pregnancies and their family situation now and make sure they're not in any harm.
She met with Nurse Chris for about 20 minutes inside. The number one goal is to make sure that these women don't feel alone. So she took time to hear this young woman's story.
She was planning to go in and find out information today about the process of having an abortion.
The mobile clinic exists to make sure women know all their options and serve as a last line of defense just moments away from making a devastating decision.
Transportation, if she would like to adopt the baby out, we can help with that. It's free. If she needs help with just any kind of bills at home, economics at home.
To show new moms that their needs will be met if they make the decision to choose life, the mobile clinic is decked out with cute baby clothes, warm blankets, and other essentials for both mother and child.
You wouldn't believe how much people donate things and knit blankets and everything for the babies, little hats and whatnot. The fondness of babies and everything steals their hearts.
The sidewalk counseling team has had victories outside of this Planned Parenthood, and the accessibility of the mobile clinic certainly aids them in their life-saving work. Despite ordinances that normally keep them from parking here in this spot, there's a dentist's office down the road that's friendly to Holy City and lets them park the bus there. This way, at least the pro-life clinic on wheels is close by, should a mother decide she's uncertain about walking into Planned Parenthood.
We've had at least seven that I know of for with the Holy City Mobile Pregnancy Center and a pro-life Charleston organization.
Nurse Chris says that her mission is to impress upon these women the preciousness of her life and her babies. She even offered to adopt the baby into her own family.
I just think of how much God loves her and the child. My sons would raise her child for her.
God bless you.
And I'll be the grandma, and I promise to teach baby Spanish.
Thanks for watching EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Follow us on our social media pages, including X, Facebook, and Instagram, and sign up for our weekly newsletter at ewtn.com/pro-life for all of the latest pro-life news. Don't forget that you still have time to sign up for the National Eucharistic Congress, the first of its kind in decades, that will convene in Indianapolis this July. You can get discounted tickets for this historic event in the life of the church through EWTN. Visit EWTN.com/Eucharist to sign up. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.